Welcome to the Fitness Business Podcast, brought to you by Active Management, the world's leading fitness business coaches, who in 2015 will help you hashtag grow your business. This is the world's number one podcast for fitness business owners and managers. We interview real owners and learn what has been working for them to make them so successful. Here's the host of the Fitness Business Podcast, Chantal.
Welcome, friends, to the Fitness Business Podcast, your source of the very best information for fitness business owners and managers. It's great to be back with you all. We have had such an exciting week because we've just hit the go live button on our brand new website. You can check it out at fitnessbusinesspodcast.com. And for anyone that's new to the show, you'll be able to jump on there and take a listen to previous episodes. We've already had heaps of great guests in the last couple of months. People like Brent Darden, Dr. Paul Bedford, Nadia Norman, Amanda Vogel, Justin Tamsett. Once you've had a look, let me know what you think. You can drop me an email anytime at chantal@activemgmt.com.au. Now, on to this week's show. Bill McBride is a health club industry veteran. He's worked in all aspects of sales, marketing, leadership, management, member experience, and operations. And he currently serves as the co-founder, president, and CEO of Active Sports Clubs. I spoke to Bill about the threat of substitution and what it means for a fitness business. He shares with us the characteristics that he looks for in managers of his clubs. And he narrows down his top three critical components to a strategic plan. So here it is. Enjoy listening to my chat with Bill McBride. Bill, in your recent IRSA presentation, you talk about the threat of substitution. Can you explain exactly what that means for a fitness business?
Yes, the threat of substitutes for things that people can do other than use our product to achieve the same goals. You know, I've done some research on Michael Porter's work. He's a very famous American business strategist. And the threat of substitutes to a product can be as dangerous as competition. And the concept is what can people do to achieve engagement with physical activity results that don't require them to utilize our services, our product, our industry. And in our space, that seems to be growing exponentially. People can do exercises in public spaces. People can exercise at work. People can exercise in hotels, in hospital environments, where they live, in their communities, at home, on devices, streaming video. So there's no lack of accessing fitness services. And you can access and do all of those things without going to a commercial fitness center or leisure center or health club or gym or studio. So I think that when we look at throughout the world trying to get a higher percentage of the population to join health clubs and be active, I think that we tend to focus on those people that already are inclined to be active, that are already inclined to utilize and join our facilities. In the U.S. market, you know, you're pushing 22-25% of the population in various markets. You're getting close to those numbers. In some of the emerging markets, you're below 10%. So the opportunities, you know, I think are more dramatic in trying to impact the next 25% of the population that aren't in clubs versus fighting and trying to just swap from other facilities those that are already involved and inclined. And we tend to spend a lot of time focused on those competitive factors of how can we take clientele from our competitors versus how we can grow the pie, how we can grow the market through having solutions for people that haven't yet felt our industry offers those solutions. So I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in recreation.
Okay, so could you give us some examples of what we could be doing to reach out to that market?
Well, I think a lot of the emergence of the group exercise activities are pulling more people in because it's more engaging than just lifting heavy things. There's an aspect of what, you know, what Curves did was make it less intimidating, make it more social, make it more people like me in a sense of community. You know, and I think that that emergence of a different mindset, I think there's a lot of other applications where that can make some good sense, where it's not just fitness and exercising, working out, but it's more playful, it's more entertaining, it's more engaging, it's more social. At the end of the day, the only thing that we offer people is motivation and accountability, helping them form habits that push them to a level that they couldn't do on their own in an environment that they enjoy. You know, as far as just basic fitness activities, it's almost commoditized at this point. So what the offering really needs to be around is habit formation, motivation, inspiration, engagement, social engagement, those types of things. Because if you have those types of things, you'll get the results versus focusing on results, which sometimes intimidate people.
Bill, you talk about motivation and engagement, aspects which I'm sure are highly reliant on the people within your business. Now, you currently serve as the co-founder, president, CEO of Active Sports Clubs. Tell me, what are the characteristics that you look for in team members and in particular in managers of your clubs?
Yes, I mean, there's an emergence in our business that is changing. It used to be that we looked for, and I'm going to answer this question two different ways. We looked for people that were sales and marketing and promotion oriented. It was a sales and marketing business to get more people engaged and enrolled and so forth. And what's shifting now is the way consumers purchase and the way people want information, it's shifting now to more programmatic. How your program is designed, how your program is going to affect the individual, those are becoming much more dominant in the type of offerings that people have. You know, program creation, engagement versus sales and marketing as far as a business type of focus. There's a really good book out called Unselling, which discusses the new way that people purchase. And it's a lot different than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. But to your point about what we look for in our management and our employees, there are certain things that can be trained, and there are certain things that we feel that simply must be a part of the package with the individual when they walk through the door. And some of those things are initiative. I want somebody that has a history, and it's obvious in their stories of their life and their past that they show initiative, that they can take the ball and run with it, that they can operate somewhat autonomously with structure and direction, that they operate in some ways like an owner would operate with regard to the business. I also look for things like adaptability. I need somebody that can balance multiple things going on and that can kind of go with the flow and be okay when things go sideways, you know, be okay when things don't go well. And those type of people tend to be positive thinkers. They tend to be upbeat, sense of luckiness, you know, and when we dive deeper into that realm, you know, I want people that are bottom line oriented, they're results oriented. I want people that are accountable to performance and to results, not just to activities. I want people that are broad thinkers, and honesty and integrity are non-negotiable. So those are the things that we really hone in on. The things like exercise testing, touring, problem solving, conflict resolution. We can train on those areas, but those core things that somebody comes with when they walk through the door, those are the things we pay the most attention to.
Can we circle back to something that you mentioned earlier? Bill, you used the word programmation. Can you tell us a little bit more about how consumers have changed their purchasing behavior?
Yes. I mean, when you talk about the consumers of yesteryear would come into the club with a certain amount of intrigue, a certain amount of curiosity, a certain amount of trepidation, and there would be a little bit more convincing involved and a little bit more selling, if you will, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. Consumers today have done a lot of research. They're more knowledgeable. They're more in tune with the particulars of fitness, of nutrition, of weight loss, of behavioral change. And they tend to have done their homework in a great deal. So they're coming in with a much more higher level of sophistication about the product. And now it's really more about what is the program going to be that's going to help me? what is the business terms of the engagement, the membership, the pricing, those types of things. They're coming in much more, is your product right for me versus you having to start from a much further back place on the continuum and sell. So it's not as much about selling as it is about coaching and supporting an individual with how your solution fits their particular needs. So I think that's an evolution that's causing us to be more professional, to be more direct, and to be more specific in the efficacy of how we're going to approach and support people with our programs. And product knowledge and subject matter expertise and education are critical, but it's really about those inherent personality and character traits that are going to make somebody successful. So, you know, we still require certifications and degrees in certain positions, but when you're looking at skill set, you know, we look higher at character set, if you will.
Now, you've got an extensive range of experience in the fitness industry. In particular, one of your areas of specialty is business strategy. So I'm hoping you can share with us, what is it that you consider to be the top three critical components to a strategic plan?
Just three?
Just three.
I mean, you know, and some of this is going to sound redundant. If you narrow it down to three, then I've got to broad stroke it a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, the first is the vision, mission, and core objectives of the organization. You can't have a strategy without clarity around who you are, what you're trying to accomplish, and what your strengths are as far as core objectives and your competencies. So the first would be the overarching vision, mission, core values, core objectives, core competencies, you know, who you are as an organization. Mm-hmm. The second would be, what do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? What do you want to be famous for? And that's actually creating the strategic plan. We would like to be X by Y. You know, we would like to accomplish being the dominant source for fitness information, education, inspiration in our community by whatever date. And we will know we have done this by having a market penetration of 43% and an attrition rate that's below 30%. Pick your factors or your metrics, but a specific strategy. What is our strategy going to be? You cannot be all things to all people, and you can't run four or five strategies. You have to be focused on where your core competency, where your mission, vision, and core values want to take you. And what that looks like. And so that's two, the strategic plan, if you will, the strategic objective and really isolating that. Mm-hmm. And the third would be really spending time with that strategy on what the value proposition and value chain are. And value proposition is simply the revenue or price point that you're going to charge the marketplace for your services. And value chain is the expenses that it's going to cost you to deliver those services. So with a good strategy, there's simplicity, there's clarity. It should lend in this conversation with profitability. So who are you and what are you good at? What do you want to accomplish? And how are you going to structure yourself with your pricing and expense load to make sure you're profitable in doing those things?
Bill, let me ask you this. When we are doing our strategic plan for our fitness business, who are the key people in the business that should be involved in that planning process?
Every organization is different based on how it's structured with regard to culture. Some organizations are very top-down, where the leadership of the organization is going to call the shots and decide the plan and direction, and they're going to hire people to carry out functions. That can be effective. You know, typically, lack of involvement equals lack of commitment. So I'm a believer that the deeper you go with involvement in the organization to the strategic planning process, the more commitment you'll have towards that plan. So does that mean go down to frontline employees or go down to department heads or stop at directors and managers? I'm not sure. I think every organization is different. But I think once you have the core aspects of an involved, collaborative strategic plan with the leadership and stakeholders of an organization, you should take that out to the rest of the entire company and create conversation and involvement and communication around what that plan means, how we got to that plan, why we chose this direction, and really get in there and have people get enrolled in it. I don't like the term buy-in, because it sounds like you're trying to get somebody to buy into your ideas versus understand and agree to the principles involved. You know, so the word you're looking for here is enrollment. You want people to enroll in this strategy. You want people to enroll in this direction. So I think that while you might have to craft the core aspects of it at somewhat of a more senior level, you have to have enrollment throughout the entire organization.
So in an example, if we were to take Active Sports Club as an example, is a strategic plan or a strategic planning session, is that an annual event? Is it something that you do? How frequently would you do your strategic plan?
Sometimes it feels like weekly, but no. strategic planning for an organization, you know, it used to be viewed that you would create a 3 to 5 year strategic plan. That was kind of normal business nomenclature. Nowadays, I think that's so far out that, you know, it's more like 1 to 2 years, 18 to 24 months for most organizations in a very disruptive environment, which I think we're in now as an industry. You know, ideally, you'd have a somewhat of a 3 year plan, but you would revisit it regularly. You'd probably look into it quarterly to see how you're tracking. You'd probably revisit modifications to it annually. But, you know, it should be something that isn't changing every day as the wind blows, but it also has to evolve based on opportunities and based on your marketplace and so forth. So, you know, typically 1 to 3 years, but revisited and checked into on a continuous basis and modified, you know, as necessary, at least annually.
So what do you recommend is the best way for businesses to stay on track when reviewing their strategic plans?
I'm a big fan of quarterly business reviews, where you really dive into the entire business unit every quarter. But I'm also a big fan of that quarterly business review being a culmination of a 30, 60, 90 day plan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that you have to have goals and objectives, you know, on a 30, 60, 90 day basis. And they obviously roll with new additions and accomplishments. But I think that if you're using a 30, 60, 90 day plan with all your key department heads, and then you culminate that plan with a review every quarter, a deep dive quarterly business review where you really look at the business from every way possible, culturally, people, production, profitability, opportunity, strength, weakness, opportunity, threat, and you go through the whole thing and you really look at the business every quarter in a deep dive. I find that to be extremely effective because it's enough time to get some success and some traction, but not so long that you lose your way. So, you know, I believe that strategy should be backed up by, you know, monthly, 60-day, 90-day, and quarterly business reviews.
Bill, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your advice on the Fitness Business Podcast.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to share some ideas and thoughts and just have a nice conversation with you.
A big thank you to Bill for being a guest on the Fitness Business Podcast. You can find out more information about Bill at his website, which is bmc3.com. And we'll also pop his contact details in today's show notes. I love hearing about cool stuff in our industry. And this next guest is one of our awesome new sponsors. And he has a super cool program to tell us all about. It goes by the name of Tribe Team Training. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Jamie Hayes. Now, Jamie is going to tell us a little bit about Tribe Team Training. Over to you, Jamie.
Hi, Chantel. Well, Tribe Team Training is the world's leading small group training system for fitness clubs. The Tribe system helps clubs turn underutilized space and floor times into extra profit and helps clubs attract and retain members and, most importantly, provides extra work for trainers and instructors.
That's fantastic. So tell me a little bit more about maybe some situations where Tribe Team Training has come into a fitness business. Give us maybe a couple of examples if you could.
Sure. And look, let's pull back the big picture that in all countries, you know, the fitness market has become hugely competitive. You know, clubs are competing for members and prices are dropping. And fitness businesses, you know, fitness clubs are businesses. can we help the clubs and studios make more money without having to sell more memberships? Actually, the first club, you asked about, you know, examples, one of the first clubs in Australia to put in tribe team training is, you know, City Fitness in Mackay, who sort of was beta testing tribe team training, and they didn't actually have a functional training space. They run licensed Group X programs. The only space they had was on the Group X floor, but of course at peak times it was full up with their great classes. And the owner said to Hagen, the CEO of Tribe Team Training, look, sure, you know, I'd be happy to give it a go, you know, if you can get people coming at off-peak times paying money. And they started a Tribe Fit program at 6 a.m. in the morning, and it sold out almost instantaneously, and people kept on renewing for the teams because it was so popular and profitable for the club. And then one of the team members went away overseas on holiday, came back and said, oh, I'm here to sign up for my tribe team. And they said, look, I'm sorry, your space has been taken. And he's been on a waiting list for 2 seasons to get back in.
Wow, 2 seasons.
Yeah, yeah. And then the club owner who introduced me to tribe team training, Joe Cerulli from, you know, the Gainesville Health and Fitness Centre.
I do. I interviewed Joe last year, actually.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, what an incredible leader in the fitness industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
His club were, he's got an incredible team. Nobody could run small group training better than him. When I texted him, I said, Joe, you know, we're just opening a studio ourselves and want to do small group training. You know, what are you doing with the small group training? And he said, we're doing Tribe. Well, anyway, so when Joe launched and he had a small group training, you know, studio that he created, and with Tribe there's 10 people per team. You know, there's only 10 people training at the same time. You know, he launched, I think, with 18 teams, which is like, you know, over 20 sessions a week, and now he's running 52 sessions per week.
Wow.
You know, and that's in his third six-week season, he's running 52 sessions a week. As a matter of fact, the original club where Tribe is designed, this is Proactive Wanaka, in a small country town, only 5,000 members, it's only a 600-member club. That's not a big club. Mm. They run 52 sessions per week.
That is phenomenal.
That in gross revenue, that's adding, in addition to membership, over $200,000 in gross revenue.
So it just goes to show that there is opportunities out there, and Tribe is helping forge that for a number of fitness businesses.
Absolutely.
So tell us, Jamie, what made you decide to sponsor the Fitness Business Podcast?
Well, I'm a podcast addict, you know, and podcasting lets people focus their time to hear things that really interest them at the time they want to listen to. And there's a global media trend. I mean, can I speak a bit about the trends in the fitness industry?
Absolutely.
Don't worry me. Full service clubs are going 24/7. They're reducing staff, reducing services, and reducing membership fees. Meanwhile, on the other end, the low-cost 24/7 clubs are fighting each other to attract and retain the low-yield members by adding free classes. But both categories of clubs, the full-service and the 24/7 clubs, are losing those high-yield members who are willing to pay much more for variations of small group training like boot camp, CrossFit, boxing, and the like. And so Tribe gives clubs, their trainers, and Group X instructors a choice of 6 different programs to appeal to different markets, each with program notes for every session, constantly changing, on-site training, you know, so that the trainers and Group X trainers can all deliver it competently, and most importantly, the marketing and business systems to help maximize sales. And this helps clubs get into that business fast. Our goal is to help clubs add at least $5,000 a month to their bottom line, to stop clubs losing memberships, you know, members to niche competitors, and to help trainers earn extra income and to help them grow their PT businesses. And finally, a lot of Group X instructors don't think they could teach small group training, but we find about a third of the Tribe coaches are Group X teachers.
Interesting. Look, I think that that people are going to want to know a lot more about Tribe Team Training. So tell me, what is the best way for people to contact you, first of all, if they're in Australia, and then let's say anywhere else in the world?
Well, sure. I mean, globally, anybody listening to this, all they need to do is to go to www.tribeteamtraining.com, or here in Australia, go to tribeteamtraining.com.au. You know, go to the page about our team, register your details, and somebody will give you a call.
Fantastic.
So that's tribeteamtraining.com or tribeteamtraining.com.au.
Jamie, thank you so much. And we'll make sure that we pop a copy of both of those URLs in our show notes for today's episode. And we'll be talking to Jamie later on. Thanks so much, Jamie.
Thanks, Chantel.
It's time for the Fitness Business Podcast Wrap.
Here we are again at the end of another show. As always, I like to leave you with my top takeaways from this month's guest, Bill McBride. Number one, your offering needs to be around habit formation, motivation, inspiration, engagement, social engagement. These are the things that will drive results. Number two, spend time working on your strategic plan to understand your value proposition and what your value chain is. Number three, once you have the core aspects of a strategic plan, you should take that out to the rest of the company and create conversation, create involvement and communication about what that plan means. Number four, for most organizations, strategic planning takes place as a 1 to 3 year plan, but you need to revisit regularly. It has to evolve based on opportunities and based on your marketplace. And number five, you need to have goals and objectives on a 30, 60, and 90-day period and combine that with a deep dive quarterly review. Next week, our show will feature Fred Hoffman. He's the author of Going Global, an expert's guide to working abroad in the international fitness industry. And he's also the owner of Fitness Resources, an education and consultancy company. During my chat with Fred, we talk about the number one social media platform for a health club, how to stay abreast of all the tech stuff that is happening in the industry. And he also talks about his top three must-dos when it comes to technology. Before I sign off today, don't forget to rate the Fitness Business Podcast on iTunes. Go to iTunes, search for the Fitness Business Podcast under the title Ratings and Reviews. All you need to do is click there and give us a rating and write a comment. If you've got any suggestions, comments, or feedback about the show, please feel free to email me at chantal@activemgmt.com.au. Or if you've got a question about owning or managing a fitness business, let us know and we might just feature it in an upcoming show. Until next week, what you leave behind is not what's engraved in stone monuments, but what is woven into the lives of others.
You've been listening to the world's number one podcast called the Fitness Business Podcast, brought to you by Active Management. We are dedicated to helping your fitness business hashtag grow in 2015. Check out www.activemgmt.com.au for resources, tools, and more to help you. And by far, the best value for you is to become a member. So join today at www.activemgmt.com.au.